I'll be here. Yeah, exams.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So before class this morning, I'd like to cover a few practical points about the upcoming month or two here at Krishna House, and then we'll dive into our class, which is about how to deal with insults. So I'll start with the practical things, and then you can insult me, and then we'll show you how to deal with it. So, okay, a lot of things going on. First of all, I again would like to recognize Diwakarji. Welcome back. For those who don't know, Diwakar is one of our graduates here at Krishna House who's been away at Champaign-Urbana, University of Illinois, for the last year and has decided to spend some time, at least a year or so, as an ashramite, developing his spiritual life with the blessings of his parents, which is unusual. So we're very happy to have you. And his service in Krishna House will be to supervise the men's ashram upstairs. So there are we're going to reorganize the ashram as of next semester. I just want to warn all of you who are living upstairs. It won't be too radical, but we will get things a little rearranged for dealing with the different varieties of living entities who are there, including the Sankirtan party, the new bhaktas, and the devotees who are in between ashram life and household life. All right, so on that last point, I just also like to take this opportunity to recognize everyone who is doing so well in their school and coming on the heavy part of the year. We have a dichotomy of residents here. Some are working in the mission, some are working in school, and the mission people tend to get all the rah-rahs, but I want to recognize a few devotees at least. Arjuna here, he's finishing his PhD, right? You done? When you finish, okay. I think I met your professor the other day, Laura, is there a professor you have named Laura something? No?
No.
Oh, okay. And Rasaraj, are you still carrying straight A's over there? Are you? Good job. Who else here? Let's see. Pardon me? Mike, yeah, are you also straight A's? All right. Yeah. All right.
Lacey is graduating also. She's graduating with honors.
Cum laude, huh? Yeah. And Laura is finishing her first semester in that heavy-duty, compressed one-year master's program in education, right? Great. And Rukmini is graduating with honors. No, not quite. hanging in there.
With, in art. Her.
Yes, yes. We appreciate all the artwork you do for Krishna House also. And Shrestha, how is your first semester in the PhD program? You're doing okay? Is it harder here or in India?
Both.
My microbiology is microbiology. All right, anyone else in this department? I didn't recognize. Of course, Rupa Chandra Prabhu, Mr. Doctorate of Religious Studies. I just wonder if you're just staying at Krishna House just to do your PhD research. Is that? All right. Anyway, great job, everyone. And I also would like to congratulate Bhakt Clayton, who has sworn into the Navy. And he'll be taking a test for linguistics and intelligence. And all those of us who know Clayton think he'll do pretty darn well in that test. So, this week we have a couple of events coming up. Tonight, of course, the book distributors are going to Jacksonville, anyone who would like to go for that event. And Thursday night, we have the Progressive Dinner at Hillel, Catholic Center, the Episcopalian Center, and Methodist Center. So that goes from 6 to 8, and there'll be about 200 or 300 students there from various religious houses on campus. So we are going to cater the main course, which is served at the Catholic Center, barbecue tofu, and the sabji that Jagannath Prabhu is making. And as last year, it's nice if we can help serve at that point. And the other places will have a referee Brahmin go through and identify what is kosher, Krishna kosher. So you can eat the salads and the desserts and so forth with confidence. Then at the end of the event, there's a little entertainment. Akendra Prabhu will be playing, and the rabbi and I are going to sing a duet, and the Mormons and the choir. So that's all finishes up about 8:30 tomorrow night at the Catholic Center. I mean, at the Methodist Center down the street. So last year, John and Nanda Loco wore their dhotis. We'd encourage everyone to just be a little low-key in your dress. Of course, our policy here is wear whatever you're comfortable. But I was thinking that we blend in a little better and mix a little better, but it turned out that the devotees who wore their devotional dress were swarmed with people who were interested, because it's an interreligious event. So it was also a chick magnet, right, John? So depending on your motivation, but I did want to say that it seems to be a nice occasion to wear a devotional dress. If you are so inclined, feel free. All right. Can I get a quick idea how many people are planning to go to that event tomorrow night? Okay. All right. I hope you can attend. It's a lot of fun. Again, it starts at 6. You can come anytime, 6 to 8:30. Just drop in. Okay, and then Friday morning we'll have our end of term party, special guest star entertainment, and some recognitions and appreciations for the end of the year. It's been a very nice term so far. End of the term, excuse me. Then Friday evening, those who are interested are welcome to go to Tallahassee. It's a nice first Friday. Should be nice weather. It'll probably be a fantastic time for Harinam and some book distribution. So then, next week on Wednesday is our last day of Krishna lunch. We'll just be serving Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on the porch here, not on campus. And I know devotees will be heading off for various destinations, but some will be staying here. So I wanted to say a few words about those who are going to be here. Our cook is finally coming. I'm sure you'll be delighted to know. He's coming in Friday in Jacksonville, Sundar Gopal Prabhu, right? So his service will be to help just make sure that everyone here has nice prasadam 3 times a day. And I'll ask him to take that up beginning in the semester. At least 1 or 2 meals will have available for those who are still at Krishna House. How many will be here during the break? Quick show of hands. Whoa. Okay. So I'm sure he'll appreciate your help if you want to take turns cooking. You'll welcome that as well. Very good. So one last thing. Next semester begins January 6th. January 9th is the North American Temple Presidents and GBC meeting in Houston. This year we are invited to attend that event, and a friend of mine has donated $4,000 so that we can rent the Krishna.com bus to go. So the plan will be to leave here on a Thursday evening. We'll pull in everyone who's not going and any weekend warriors for the Krishna lunch on campus on Friday. But this is really a special opportunity. I want to encourage you, even if you're working, it's a good day to take off work. The Thursday night club meetings at Santa Fe, and also we're planning to start next semester Thursday night programs at Krishna House. We'd like to request that those who are organizing put those back to the second week of the term, so that as many devotees as possible can go. This is a unique event that has never happened before. I don't know if it'll happen again, but I would like to, I'm encouraging anyone who could possibly go to make the effort to go. Timing is very awkward, first week of the school year, but hey, you know, people skip classes for all kinds of reasons, right? So please give that some thought. We'll put up a sign-up sheet, and you'll have a chance to meet some wonderful devotees, hear some fantastic classes, and have great kirtans. The Houston Temple is opening in May at long last. For those who haven't been there, it's a huge, beautiful building, the largest Hare Krishna center in North America, with a beautiful on-site Indian-style construction. So that is coming up. I want to just prepare you for it. And Sundari, I want to ask if you'd kindly put up a sign-up sheet for that so we can start collecting names. We have 33 places, and there's no fees, no charge. The ashram accommodations will be very simple. There is a hotel accommodation available. If you want to pay, it would be about $90 for 3 nights. Rasa Raj?
What
were the days? January 9th is the... That's a Thursday, yeah. We'll be, and coming back Sunday night or early Monday morning. Now remember, you can sleep on the bus. It is equipped with bunks. So that is, you get your night's rest on the bus coming and going. And then we'll adjust everything to accommodate the pilgrims.
But you're leaving that Thursday night?
Leaving on Thursday night.
After 6?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll wait for you.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so, okay. So Sundari, did you have anything to say?
No, I was wondering if you were going to ask who's going to come.
Well, get a preliminary count, a head count. Who thinks they could make this trip? Okay. All right, good, thank you. Again, if there's any way you can go, I guarantee you won't regret it. It is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you. Anything else that we need to discuss for this morning? Okay, everyone clear on all the upcoming events? I did have a question. Yes?
For serving on the front porch on the last 3 days, I was wondering if you were going to be taking turns doing that, or is it...
It'd be nice if we could get some volunteers to take turns, right? Otherwise, Alex can just feed us all.
And,
pardon me?
And Clayton.
And Clayton, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it'd be nice to help those who are off from Krishna lunch but not yet leaving for other places. Does anyone know who owns the white car in the parking lot with Goranga on the license plate? Oh, okay, good. Okay. Thank you. He saved me a towing call. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. So, anything else? So, we'll go into our Bhagavatam class. This morning, I'm going to be reading from first the third canto. You ready? Okay. This is a section in which the great king Dhritarashtra and his wicked son Duryodhana confront their uncle Vidura. So the topic is about insults, and I'm going to pull out some choice sections of insults from the Bhagavatam to read this morning. Okay. In fact, okay. Okay. So if you would scroll back a few verses, and I'll just bring you up to speed on the story here. So. That's fine right there. Okay, so here are the three characters involved in this vignette. It is Vidura, Dhritarashtra, and Duryodhana. Vidura and Dhritarashtra, as you know, are brothers. And who was their third brother?
Pandu.
Pandu, right. Now, he passed away. He was the king, but he passed away. And Dhritarashtra is blind, so he was disqualified from being the king, but he's a placeholder for the time being until Pandu's sons are of age to take the throne. But Dhritarashtra's sons are very ambitious, especially Duryodhana, and he wants to take the throne for himself. So he's influencing his father all the time to do things against the sons of Pandu. And Vidura, the youngest of the three brothers, is criticizing his older brother here for his lack of dharma, his lack of decorum, of respect for his brother, and also his basic lack of honesty and integrity in the way he's treating his nephews. So Vidura said, "You must now return the legitimate share to Yudhisthira, the Pandus, Pandu's oldest son, who has no enemies and who has been forbearing through untold sufferings due to your offenses. He's waiting with his younger brothers, among whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing heavily like a snake. Surely you are afraid of him. Now, Vidura is not doing the insulting here. I just want to let you know. He's just telling his older brother like it is. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, has accepted the sons of Pritha, or Pandu, as his kinsmen, and all the kings of the world are with Lord Krishna. He is present in his home with all the family members, the kings and princes of the Yadu dynasty, who have conquered an unlimited number of rulers, and he is their lord. Now he's warning him. You are maintaining offense personified, your son, Duryodhana, as your infallible son. But he is envious of Lord Krishna. And because you are thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you are devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good to the whole family. While speaking thus, Vidura, whose personal character was esteemed by respectable persons, was insulted by Duryodhana, who was swollen with anger and whose lips were trembling. Duryodhana was in company with Karna, his younger brothers, and his maternal uncle, Shakuni. Here's Duryodhana's insult. Who has asked him to come here, this son of a kept mistress? So that's why Vidura was not eligible for the throne, because he was the son of his father, the king, the king's brother, actually, through a mistress in the court, and not by a legitimate queen. He is so crooked that he spies in the interest of the enemy against those on whose support he has grown up. Toss him out of the palace immediately and leave him only with his breath. So Vidura is speaking to Dhritarashtra in a very straightforward way in front of everybody, including Duryodhana. See? So this is one of the qualities of a sadhu. Even if the words are going to be a little blunt for some, he still speaks the truth. So, how did Vidura respond? Here's the description. Thus being pierced by arrows through his ears and afflicted to the core of his heart, Vidura placed his bow on the door and quit his brother's palace. He was not sorry, for he considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme. Could we look at the purport there, please? In this verse, Srila Prabhupada explains... A pure devotee of the Lord. Who would like to read this? Mike Vaishnav, would you like to do the honors? Yeah.
A pure devotee of the Lord is never perturbed by an awkward position created by the external energy of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 3:27, it is stated, Prikimnani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara buddhatma kartaham iti manyate. A conditioned soul is absorbed in material existence under the influence of different modes of external energy. Absorbed in the false ego, he thinks that he is doing everything by himself. The external energy of the Lord, the material nature, is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord, and the conditioned soul is fully under the grip of the external energy. Therefore, the conditioned soul is fully under the control of the law of the Lord. But due to illusion only, he thinks himself independent in his activities. Duryodhana was acting under such influence of the external nature, by which he would be vanquished at the ultimate end. He could not accept the sound advice of Vidura, but on the contrary, he insulted that great soul, who was the well-wisher of his whole family. Vidura could understand this because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. In spite of being very strongly insulted by Duryodhana's words, Vidura could see that Duryodhana, under the influence of Maya, the external energy, was making progress on the path toward his own ruination. He therefore considered the acts of the external energy to be supreme, yet he also saw how the internal energy of the Lord helped him in that particular situation. A devotee is always in a renounced temperament because the worldly attractions can never satisfy him. Vidura was never attracted by the royal palace of his brother. He was always ready to leave the place and devote himself completely to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Now he got the opportunity by the grace of Duryodhana, and instead of being sorry at the strong words of insult, He thanked him from within because it gave him the chance to live alone in a holy place and fully engage in the devotional service of the Lord. The word gata vyata, without being sorry, is significant here because Vidura was relieved from the tribulations which trouble every man entangled in material activities. He therefore thought that there was no need to defend his brother with his bow because his brother was meant for ruination. Thus he left the palace before Duryodhana could act. Maya, the supreme energy of the Lord, acted here both internally and externally.
Okay. Thank you. So here is one way that we see a very wise person responds to insults. How would you characterize Vidura's response here in a nutshell? Anyone? What did he do? He's insulted, so he was detached. He just left. He took the opportunity to leave. So in the animal kingdom, there are four motives or drives. What are those four things that prompt an animal to do everything it does? Right. Nidrahara Maitunyabhayam, right. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So the human being also has these same four propensities, but we are born with a bigger brain. You know, so you see, a human baby is born with this gigantic head and little shriveled arms and legs. And the head is so heavy they can't even lift it up for, 6 weeks or something? Months? Can't even get it off the mat. So there is a reason for this. I mean, compare that to a foal, for example, a horse. A baby horse is on its feet within a few minutes of birth. So the human body is meant for higher, more thoughtful life than the animals. But we also have to deal with these four proclivities. And of the four, the strongest one is what?
Defending.
Yeah, you generally think it's the mating urge, but in fact the defending urge is more pervasive in our lives. So we experience this defending urge when somebody insults us or when somebody attacks us physically. That's one thing. But much more common. How many here have been physically attacked, violently attacked in their lifetime? How many here have violently attacked someone in their lifetime? Okay. This was in. Yeah, right. Well, he is an ex-Marine, so he's entitled. So physical defense is one thing. Everyone has a right to protect themselves physically. But much more common and much more draining in many cases is when we are attacked on a subtle level. Our sense of self or even our property, our sense of property, of proprietorship. That sense of proprietorship is, in fact, just an illusion, isn't it? I mean, we own something for a period of time, but then we can't take it with us. But we have, meanwhile, while I'm here in this body, then this is mine, right? Our 2-year-old granddaughter, that's one of her first words, she was saying, mine, mine. One of the first concepts that she learned. So the defending propensity kicks in when our sense of self is insulted, like who we are, who we think we are, what we think we're entitled to. Even in elementary school, we learn this, that those things can't really hurt us, right? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never hurt me. So we're enjoying, and we understand that these are not real threats, and yet they can really bug us, right? When somebody expresses some ill will or criticizes us unfairly, especially unfairly. Now, there's a story about this gangster criminal. He's one of the worst criminals in American history. He murdered several people, robbed banks. Finally, the police had cornered him, But he wasn't going to surrender. He was just shooting it out with the police. And they finally killed him. And when they got to the body, they found he had left a notebook. And he wrote in this notebook something to the effect that, I am a person who never meant harm for anyone, and I'm the most misunderstood person in the world. So this is how everybody thinks. We feel that we're not understood, and people are therefore treating us inappropriately. And when that happens, there's a great sense of injustice and defense. This is the defending propensity. I know, I want to straighten this person out. I want to be understood. Nobody knows how much I have suffered. Nobody knows. Nobody understands. Would you like to sing a few bars? Yes, so it's very helpful to understand that everyone is feeling this way in the material world. That's the first thing. So we're not any different in that respect than anyone else. So knowing that, we have the power to make other people suffer by our insults, or by our criticism. Is one way to become sensitive to or learn how to deal appropriately with insults that we receive. In other words, if we dish it out, then we can expect to get it back. So we don't have any control over what other people may say or think about us. We just, you know, there's no way to control that. But that's one of the threefold miseries, right? Which one? The adibotic, miseries inflicted on us by other people. But we do have control as to whether we are going to exercise our ability to push other people's buttons. That is a great gift of life in this world, that even from a very small age, children are empowered to learn how to push their parents' buttons, just instinctively, intuitively. I don't know why that happens in evolution or nature, but children can, they just know how to play the parents just right. And with the big-eyed looks. Even Krishna was, I guess that's where it comes from here. It comes from Krishna. He did the same thing with his parents, right? Much worse than that. So the my point is that if we want to become tolerant and learn how to respond appropriately when we are insulted, the first step is to stop insulting others. And it's sometimes our duty to criticize others, but rarely. And even criticize is the wrong word. Critique is a better word. It is occasionally, if we're in a role as a teacher, A, and B, the person that we're teaching has accepted us as a teacher. that allows us, or obliges us, really, to give instruction. But that instruction should only be given to the extent that the person we're instructing is able to take it and is actually responding in an appropriate way. So if it is given appropriately, then the person we're instructing will respond very favorably. It will correct or change or improve their behavior. If that's not happening, then we are not only wasting our time by trying to instruct them, but we're pushing them further away in our relationship. So one just has to be a little practical about these things. What is the ninth offense to the chanting of the holy name? Instructing a faithless person, right, about the great benefits of chanting. Somebody has no interest, if they have no inclination, if they really don't want to hear it, and yet we say, no, you got to take it, it's really important. In Mad Magazine years ago, there was a little cartoon about Hare Krishna devotees. Back in those days, the airports were a big venue. We didn't have any experienced devotees. The only way we had to reach out was distributing books. The only income we had was from distributing books. And the airports turned out to be a great place. So there were Hare Krishnas in airports all over the country. And that's how a lot of people knew about us. So there was a little cartoon in Mad Magazine, one of my favorite educational pursuits as a teenager. And there was a devotee with a book, and there was a traveler in the airport, and they're walking towards each other, and then there's this cloud of dust with fists sticking out here, with cash in it, and a book sticking out there. And then the last panel, the passenger is there with a book in his throat. And the devotee is walking away with a stack of bills. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Yes, it did not do much for our reputation in those days. So if we are trying to teach somebody about bhakti yoga for our own motives, our own purposes, and we're not really seeing how they're responding to it, that's not only an offense, but it just is having the opposite effect. So my point is, there are occasions where we are obliged or encouraged to teach or correct, but they're rare. And much more often, we make the mistake of trying to give more than people really want. So this is going to create the opposite effect. All right, so that's one example of an inappropriate or unbalanced relationship. Another is if people don't understand us and try to instruct us, okay? And we're on the other end where we are receiving instruction we really don't want to hear. So that has that is a challenge for us to respond in a way like Vidura here, okay? If people want to instruct us and we don't want to accept it, we should first look at how we're responding within our heart. You know, is it making us defensive? So if somebody makes us, invokes our defending propensity, that simply means they don't understand how their actions are affecting us. It doesn't mean they're necessarily ill-motivated. It just means they don't have a very good grasp of how we're responding to what they're saying. So a first strategy to respond when you're feeling that defending propensity creep up is what's called an I message. And to help that person become aware of how their actions are affecting us. So the I message is a very neutral, factual statement which does not contain the word Y-O-U. Okay? In other words, we don't want to respond in a way that is critical back to the other person. We simply want to say that when I hear this, when I hear these words, I feel this. Just want you to know that when you say these things, I'm feeling this. Okay, it does contain the word you. But it's not the accusatory you. When what you're saying is causing me to feel this, I just want you to know that. Okay? I'm not passing judgment. I'm just informing you that although your intention may be something different, what you're causing in me is a feeling of anger and resentment. So that is empowering for you because you don't have to get in a fight with this person. You don't have to criticize them back. You just inform them that they're hurting your feelings. And then you let them respond as they are going to. Remember this verse at the end of the Bhagavad Gita? Dite chasi tita kuru. One of my friends said, this is my favorite verse in the Bhagavad Gita. What's that? The one where Krishna says, now do whatever you want to do. So an I message is like that. You let the other person know, hey, you're making me upset. And then you leave it at that. Then if they're a gentleman or lady, then they'll stop. Because no gentleman or lady wants to hurt another person. If they're a jerk, then they'll continue. And if they continue, then you know, okay, then I'll just excuse myself because no one wants to associate with a jerk, right? You see. So this is how an I message is empowering. It puts the onus back on the other person, just letting you know that this is irritating me. You're pushing my buttons. So that is one way to avoid the confrontation. See, the whole point is if we respond in kind when we're being insulted, then what is the difference between us and the person who's insulting us? They started it. That's what kids always say, right? They started it. But that really doesn't count. There is a beautiful section which we'll study next semester from the first canto in which Maharaj Parikshit, the great king, is touring his kingdom And he comes upon this unspeakable sight, unbelievable sight. Here is a man who's dressed like a king himself, beating a cow and a bull. And he's beaten them to the point where this bull has just got one leg functioning left. He's just standing there on one leg. The other three are broken. So when the king sees him, because his kingdom is so well managed and protected, something like this would never happen. And cow, the bull, the emblem of Dharma, of religiosity. So the king asks the bull, who has done this to you? Now, this is really doesn't take a crime scene investigation to find out, you know? I mean, it's all happening right there. He sees it. This bogus king is beating. But he asks the bull, who's done this to you? And the bull responds in a very unusual way. Do you remember how he responds? He starts by asking a bunch of questions or raising philosophical points. He says, well, that's a very interesting question. Why do we suffer? Some people say we suffer just as a result of what we've done in the past. Other people say that suffering just happens randomly. And some people say that suffering can't be explained at all. So in light of all that, who do you think is doing it? You know, if it was me, I would have raised my last hoof and said, it was him. But because the bull responded in this way, Maharaj Parikshit says, now I can understand you are religion personified because you refuse to accuse the person who is hurting you and therefore share in the reaction of that sin. So if there's somebody in your life, and we all have this tendency to hold grudges, right? Somebody has hurt us somewhere along the way and we carry that resentment as a sort of get out of jail free card for anything that we may do wrong. Okay. Well, okay, I may have this problem or that fault, but when I was young, this person did this to me. And therefore, what else can I do but act this way, you see? And so we foolishly think that holding a grudge will somehow give us an excuse. And this is a great tragedy, because if we're holding a resentment against somebody else, then we are sharing in whatever they did wrong to us. And that is hurting us. It's not hurting them. See, I'll get even with you. I'm going to drink this poison, and then you'll see. So the second step to learning how to deal with insults is realizing that if we allow ourselves to get in the defending mode, then the other person has won. Their purpose was to hurt us, and we're allowing them to do that. So the second thing to consider is that we need to shed that pain and just pull out the barb, pull out the thorn, and throw it away. We have to let it go. It doesn't do any good to carry it around. It's very detrimental to say to our friends, do you know what this person did to me? You know, we may be feeling like we need to express that, and I mean, that's natural that we should. But by harboring it, by giving it time, by thinking about it, by stewing on it, we just make the pain worse. It is a again, the defending propensity pushing us to behave in a way that's self defeating. So learning how to get rid of the insult or not take offense is one of the great benefits of chanting Hare Krishna and practicing bhakti. Getting the spiritual strength to be able to look at it objectively and say, even if this person meant to hurt me, it doesn't. They're not really a bad person. See? So, like the bull, if we criticize our enemy, then we will share in the offense. That happens not only immediately in this life, but then when you die, if you're thinking about that such and such, then who do you think you're going to take birth with in your next lifetime? The same person, right? Because there's so much connection there. You know that beautiful story of the priest and the prostitute? Remember that? They happen to live next door to each other. So the priest in his house, he would see customers coming to the prostitute. And he would say, oh, such a sinful person. So finally, he decided, every time she has a customer, I'm going to put up a rock between our properties and build a fence. So for every customer, she'd put up a rock. He would put up a rock. And over time, this big fence was built between their property. So the priest died thinking of that fence, all of the prostitute's sins. And he took a hellish birth. And the prostitute also died thinking of that fence. And she was thinking, oh, what a sinful person I have been. And she was elevated. So thinking negatively about other people hurts only ourselves. Remember the quality of the most advanced devotees that we read in the Nectar of Instruction? We're advised there to find out what kind of person. Clayton, can you quote it? Yes, find out a person to teach you whose heart is devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So if we're in a critical mood, we need to recognize this is hurting only us. This is holding us back. It's not hurting the other person. In fact, that's just what they wanted. So it's very easy to talk about these things. It's difficult to put them in practice. I'd just like to end with this one other section here. This is from the sixth canto, and in brief, the great king Chitraketu is out on a tour, and he sees a very funny sight. Lord Shiva giving Srimad Bhagavatam class with his wife on his lap. Okay. I don't think we'll try that, Cheetah. But if we did, the way you reacted is the same way Chitraketu reacted. He laughed. Look at that. So just scroll back a few verses. I just want to read some of these choice insults from Parvati. I'm sorry, if you go back to 11, verse 11. The goddess Parvati said, "Alas, has this upstart now received a post from which to punish shameless persons like us? Has he been appointed ruler, carrier of the rod of punishment? Is he now the only master of everything? Alas, Lord Brahma, who's taken his birth from the lotus flower, does not know the principles of religion, nor do great saints like Bhrigu and Narada, nor the four Kumaras. Manu and Kapila also have forgotten religious principles. I suppose it to be because of this that they have not tried to stop Lord Shiva from behaving improperly." Very eloquent insult, isn't it? She's angry at Chitraketu. She curses him. And then Chitraketu responds with this verse, which is 28. Let me go ahead. Just want to get some of those choice insults in. So he comes over and he bows down. And she finally says, "I curse you to be born in a family of demons, like a monster." And she has this power to curse him, to have that horrible fate. So what would you do if you were in that Chitraketu situation? How might you respond?
Curse her back.
You could curse her back. Yeah. Could you please control your wife? All right. What else might you do?
Cry.
Right. Oh, no. Good. And still one more I wanted to see. Yeah, you might say, "Oh no, please, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, please take it back." So Chitraketu did none of those things. He said, "Okay, my dear Parvati, I accept your curse, and I accept that God is acting by his own will." And then he left. So he didn't try to fight it in any way. And Parvati was confused by this. Well, how is it that he didn't try to do something about it? Which, in a sense, makes you think she wanted him to be on the defensive. But he didn't do it. So then Lord Shiva spoke this verse. "Devotees solely engaged in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord." So this is a wonderful and famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. The point is, Chitraketu didn't fear getting this curse because he knew that nothing could take away his service to Krishna. And whatever his situation might be, he could serve Krishna in some way. Therefore, he accepted it as Krishna's mercy. So this is how devotional service, how bhakti puts one above the platform of fighting and defending and being insulted and so forth. For ourselves, we should be able to accept any insult. For Krishna, on the other hand, we have to be prepared to either defend the Lord or his devotees, or else leave that place and just not associate with people who are so critical. Now, I wanted to read the story because, like I said, it's hard to put this in practice. At least we should understand intellectually that when we respond in a defensive way, is a low response, an inappropriate response, most of the time. Now, there was an article in Dandavats, perhaps some of you saw it, the devotional website, about female Diksha gurus. Did anyone see that article? So it was written by a very nice devotee, a lady who's been in Bangladesh, I think, for many years. And she was making the point that women should not have this responsibility of spiritual leadership, and she's speaking as a woman. She said, because women tend to be more emotional. And she gave this story as an example. When Parvati cursed Chitraketu, she responded in a very emotional way. So I read that, and I happen to have a different opinion on the subject. And I almost never respond to things that I read online, you know, because it seems to be automatically in the animal kingdom. But anyway, but in this case, I just couldn't help myself, and because there's this other pastime involving Parvati and Shiva. When you remember Bhrigu came, he was testing out Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Right, to see how they would respond to insults. So when he came to Shiva, he insulted him how?
He didn't want to erase it. He said, "You're dirty, then don't touch me."
Yeah, well, that was part of it. But
a verbal insult.
He was giving him verbal insults. You hang out with ghosts, and you're covered with ashes, and you got a garland of skulls around your neck. You know, this was his brother he was talking to. And Lord Shiva became really angry. Remember, Shiva's in charge of the destruction of the universe. So not somebody you would want to upset. But he became very angry, and he was ready to kill his brother. And who intervened?
Parvati.
Right. So I just wrote a little... Well, look. Okay, on this occasion, it was Parvati who had to control her husband. Because her husband got emotional. I was just making the point that, you know... And, I mean, does that seem like a reasonable point to you? Okay, so anyway, I just wrote that. I said, you know, so therefore we should take this article with a grain of salt. So I got back a very snarky letter. Not from the lady who wrote it. She's very nice. But from this god brother of mine, who's like sort of the Rush Limbaugh of ISKCON. And it was actually a very brilliant letter because he just used one word that irritated me. He said, "Oh, you have my condolences." I said, "This... condescending, patronizing, so-and-so." So I wrote a letter back. And, you know, it was definitely one of those letters that you don't think about. It just comes from the animal platform. And then I went out for a japa walk. And the whole time on the japa walk, I think that was a stupid thing to do. And then I came back, and when I was next at my email, I saw I hadn't sent that letter. I thought, oh, thank God, and I deleted it. So the point is, ready, fire, aim. You know, if we're acting like that, it probably means we're not dealing appropriately with insults. Devotee means, hey, I see that this is out of my control. This person probably doesn't mean ill. If I want to take care of myself, I need to forgive this person and realize I might do the same thing if I were in their situation. And one way or another, shed that pain and just let it go, because it really doesn't affect us. It only affects us if we allow it to. All right, well, that is my spiel on this subject. Anyone have any comments? Tony?
What if you're in a situation where, like, the other person feels like insulted or offended, but you really didn't mean to offend somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And you even like, there's no offense, so to speak. And then the other person feels like really offended. So
anyone have any suggestions for that situation? No.
Well, you could apologize in such a way that you're sorry that they feel that way without not admitting but accepting that you did something wrong. Like, I'm sorry you feel that way. Is there anything I could do to make you feel better?
Right. That's very nice. In fact, I could suggest, too, that if you rephrase that question as an open-ended question, in other words, the way you said it, is there anything I can do? That's a yes or no answer. But if you rephrase it as an open-ended question, what can I do, or how can I make this up to you? So that will inspire the other person to speak. If you ask a yes or no question and the person's mad, you're likely to get a no. No, there's nothing you can do. I'll never get over this as long as... John?
So, prior to becoming a devotee, sometimes something that we would do to like insult people, like sometimes somebody would like walk in the room or come near us and they get within earshot and they're like, oh, here comes so-and-so. Let's, you know, kind of jostle them a little bit. But you don't do it in a direct manner. You like say things that you know will offend this person, but not directly calling them out. And I've noticed that this happens sometimes in devotional circles too. So with regard to the I message, it doesn't seem like it would work, because you could say, you know, when you say this, I feel this, and they're like, well, I'm not talking about you. But when really, in reality, they are. They mean to cause you some sort of distress. And how
are you talking about, like, in jest, if you're joking with somebody?
Or even in seriousness. Yeah. How do you rectify this?
Well, first of all, the devotee who's doing that is not very thoughtful. You see, the whole point is that if we are in a critical mood about others, the result is that we're going to get criticized. So even indirectly being critical of somebody else like that is not a devotional. It's not something you can do for Krishna, because Krishna is very fond of his devotees. Now, jest is another thing. If you're making a joke at somebody's expense, that can sometimes be very well received, but it's delicate. Okay?
Well, like, for example, you know, I have relationships with people that I can joke around with, you know, like, I can sit and make fun of them, insult them, and they'll do it back to me. But then sometimes people that don't have that relationship with me think they can cross that barrier, and then you get offended. It's like, you know, you and I don't have this sort of relationship and this friendship, so I don't feel like this is warranted, you know. So, I mean, was that like out of place? Is that
no? An I message would be appropriate. They say, look, I know you. Your intention was to joke, but that actually made me upset. I just want you to know that. And people may even hide behind the jest as a.
They would say,
that was directed. Well, clearly, this is a person who's not very sophisticated in spiritual life, and you probably don't want to associate with them a lot. So that's another strategy. That is an acceptable strategy, to just say, I don't care to, or just to stay away from that person. Offer respects from a distance. It is. I heard a really good insult the other day. Would you like to hear that? And this is one that just made everybody laugh. You know, do you know our board members, Brahmatirtha and Anantasesha? Anantasesha is from India, and he is a pharmacist down at CVS. And Brahmatirtha is a Jewish entrepreneur, and he's a very beloved person, but he goes in to get all his prescriptions there at CVS from Anantasesha-ji. So Anantasesha was saying, yes, I see Brahmatirtha all the time down at the pharmacy. I said, does he go in there to get his prescriptions? And he said, no, he just comes in whenever he's got a coupon.
Oh,
there's also the story of the king would keep a jester in his court, and nobody could insult the king except the jester. This famous court jester, Gopal Bhone, his king once asked him, "Gopal, what is the difference between you and an ass?" And Gopal steps up to the king and steps back three. He said, "About three steps." So anyone else who would have said that would have had their head cut off. But the king enjoyed it. So that kind of humor is appreciated, but it's got it. You have to be careful. I appreciate your point, John. That it can also make one feel insulted. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Oh, Chaitanya, you want
to?
Thank you.